Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Coming up on the Thursday, May 25th edition of the Chase Thomas podcast, we got the full ride with Matt Green, Philly University of North Georgia alumni. Matt Green, we talk little Georgia. Jaden Riddell winds up at Georgia over Tennessee. We talk about a fun CFB Green Line stat of the week. And then we also talk about Georgia, Florida staying in Jacksonville for at least a couple more years. Michigan, Penn State moving to a neutral site to close this fall. And then some week one SEC betting lines that are already out. Some pretty surprising ones that we parsed through. And then also the Big Ten. Yeah. Big Ten over-unders, those are out as well. So we dive into our early thoughts on how the Big Ten is going to shake out, whether it's Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan State, Penn State. We talk all about it next here on today's show. So as always, thank you for listening. And if you're a first-time listener, make sure you hit that subscribe button on your preferred podcast player so you never miss a future episode. And by future episode, I mean daily. So tomorrow, you'll have another one, and it's going to be jam-packed. Just as a heads up. Also, make sure you subscribe if you're a fan of YouTube, and go to youtube.com/ChaseThomasPodcast. Like and subscribe. Did I just say if you're a fan of YouTube? Didn't know what to say there, but we'll move past it. youtube.com/ChaseThomasPodcast. Like and subscribe as we get closer and closer to hitting that 1,000 subscriber mark. So make sure to take care of that today. If you're already a subscriber to this very program, first, thank you. And also, make sure that you take a second, hit that pause button right now, and leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, if that is how you are listening to today's show. As always, you can email this very program if you'd like Matt or myself to answer a college football question on next week's show. We'd be happy to do so. All you have to do is email us at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com or tweet at me at @Chase_Thomas or the podcast Twitter feed at @PodChaseThomas. There you go. That's about it. So enjoy the show.
The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another edition of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Everything School HQ. I don't even have to say it tongue in cheek anymore. It was decided by USA Today just this afternoon that I sent over to Matt Green on Instagram. I don't know if he's seen it yet, but
I have not seen that.
If you want to check your messages real quick, Matt Green, it was that confirmed out. That Tennessee was the everything sport school this year.
If USA Today says it, then I guess it's decided.
It says here you saw it, Matt Green. It says all sports champion going back to back, and it says you saw it.
Did I see it?
It says you saw it. I think you're hiding.
You know, I had the message pulled up. I hadn't actually read it, but all sports champion. What does that even mean? I don't even know what that. I see no qualifications, no data. I need the data. I need the hard facts.
You know what it says? Everything School HQ is alive and well. That voice you hear when it's not my own is my good friend, Philly University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green, down there in Decatur, Georgia. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. It is good to be back. I hope you're doing well. I think it sounds like you're going to avoid an IL stint. I think everything's looking good, hopefully. But yeah, man, it's good to be back here talking football. Braves got a dub, didn't get swept by the Dodgers, so it's good.
It was good. A lot has unfolded. Like, I did my old man thing. I was talking to John on the MLB pod about it earlier, where it was just a fluke, like, weird step, and it took 4 or 5 months to get right, and I just did not want to go through that all over again, especially right back to back. So getting told today from the radiologist that I did not have a break in the same spot that I broke 7 months ago now, but I've been kind of done with PT for the last 3 months is a breath of fresh air, because it was welcome, very much welcome news, because that was weighing on me quite heavily of where things stood on that front. So getting that news tonight was quite good.
Well, we're happy to hear it, man. But how are we getting started? I got some stats this week.
I think we have to start with your green line stat of the week, because I didn't know that this would ever make an appearance on the off-season edition of these very shows, sir, because, I mean, when you think stats, you think regular season, you think with actual games going on. So I have no idea where you're going with this, so I'm intrigued, because all I know, folks, on our super secret Google Doc here that outlines each and every show on here on the Chase Thomas podcast, I don't know. It just says two stats, and I don't know where we're going to go with this. So what do you have, Matt?
The first number we got is 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that number 3 is the number of commitments that the University of Georgia has gotten since May 15th, when Dylan Raiola, the number one player in the country, committed. And this is what I was trying to tell you, sir. I'm not going to make this a Dylan Raiola podcast for the next, 365 days. But you've already seen how Georgia is now buzzing on the recruiting trail since Raiola committed. And that's the effect that he's really going to have. Even if he never plays a down at Georgia, I listened in to some of your and Graham Coffey's conversation, friend of the pod.
Mm-hmm.
And if he never plays a down at Georgia, he'll still be, I think, responsible for getting a lot of good players to hop on board. And the first two were, some three-star commits, a tight end and an offensive lineman, huge offensive lineman out of New York, like 6'8", 330 or something. But we've seen what Kirby Smart's success has been with three stars. So the Jordan Davises of the world and Javon Bullards of the world, you've seen so many of those guys become really good players for Georgia. But more importantly, you're hearing a buzz with so many of the big time prospects. In this one, Jaden Riddell, I think somehow like as the number one, number two tight end in the country, out of Missouri. So it's like, I know Tennessee was real high on him. They were down to one of his final teams, but I mean, he's a top 50 recruit. I think On3's got him as like the 22nd ranked player, just a big time offensive skill player that, without a doubt, was influenced by the number one player in the country signing on to the Georgia Bulldogs. Like, obviously,
I mean,
Georgia's
cool,
doing a lot.
But the reporting on that has been like, I mean, I think tight end's a little bit different, because like, you can easily, it's just one of those narrative things. You can spin the narrative of like it's a Raiola effect, but it's also just there's not a better program for top of the line tight ends than the University of Georgia right now. Darnell goes in the draft. Brock Bowers is being mocked for top 5. Like, Graham and I were talking about this new kid. Y'all just have this alliteration fascination now. Lucky Lawson or whatever.
Lawson Lucky.
Yeah, that guy.
A legacy like, at the University of Georgia.
Yeah, and then you got Oscar Delp, obviously. So I think people are going to neatly combine that to a Raiola effect, but I would lend that more to Georgia's the best tight end NFL factory right now in the country. So the best tight end picking the University of Georgia is might just be that's that it might
no,
just
that's
be that def- simple.
That's definitely true. And Todd Hartley has been as good as it gets as far as recruiting
to a certain position. Like him and Brian Hartline have to be up there as like just getting the elite of elite players every single year. But I think part of the Raiola effect is like this buzz it's creating with just so many big time prospects. Like you saw it was KJ Bolden out of Buford say, yeah, like this really kind of changed the way I looked at Georgia now. So you kind of hear that and you're like, you know what? I got an offer from Georgia. Maybe I should go ahead and jump on board before there's no spots left. Like they already have like 16 commits in.
Well, remember
in
they
not
don't have
June.
A, you don't Georgia have a limit anymore. That, you don't have to do 25 anymore. Like you can kick guys out, and like that number
of
can
course.
Be 57 now. And,
but it is yeah. there is some sort of limit. You know, you don't know if it's like a, it's not NCAA limit, but it's a how many Georgia needs kind of thing. Mm. Like you don't. They might be 24. It might be 28. It might be 30. You don't really know, but you're like, I mean, if everyone wants to go here, I want to get my spot, you know? Mm. So with how many five-star recruits, like obviously, or receivers, I mean, obviously those guys have all the options in the world. And Jeremiah Smith is still committed to Ohio State, even though there's a lot of buzz around Georgia. But with how many guys are out there and kind of, you know, looking at Georgia, you might think, I want to go ahead and get a spot while I still can.
I also just think it's like an easy thing. Austin Price from the pod here at FallQuest made a good point where it's like it's an easy thing to recruit against if you're going up against Georgia in this particular Raiola thing where, I mean, even with Nico, like you could do the same for Nico at Tennessee, maybe a little bit less because he's literally already QB2 and he is going to be next in line no matter what. So he's going to get a shot because it's a crowded quarterback room at UGA. And because you have a lot of talent still very much in that room, the way to pitch it, it's like the reason I don't buy the Riddell Raiola or really the Raiola effect all that much is that like there's still, I'm not saying he won't be the guy, but there's enough that recruiters and sharp recruiters across the board can be like, why would you, it'd be stupid for you to commit to Raiola because there's no way of you knowing. Like, there's just too many variables that he'll be the guy who ends up being the one who throws you passes. You need to pick the school. You need to pick the coaches. You need to pick the track record of getting guys to the league. But if you are making your college decision based on a quarterback, it's stupid because of the movement and because of how quickly things can change in that regard. So if you're basing your decision on catching balls from Dylan Raiola or Nico Iamaleava, you're making a mistake because it's just what we've seen in this sport across the board is it rarely goes that cleanly and that you should not pick a school for that being.
Oh, of course. But it's like, you're not supposed to pick a school because of the head coach or your position coach, but so many guys still do, right? Like it's,
well, I think that's a better choice than quarterback. I would pick
but we've seen position coaches just move like that, like year in and year out. So you just never know with that. But I mean, I think it's just the broader, you know, what it says that the best quarterback, the best overall player in the entire class, which I imagine if you've seen him play, you know, in person, you're probably blown away by him as well. And you're like, I want to go where that guy goes. He can get me the rock or where, whatever it is, the best player in the country views Georgia as the destination he wants to go. Maybe I should take a hard look at Georgia too. Is it that legit? You know, should I go there too? So I think it's just, with what the quarterback position it is, you know, it's just not the same as every other position. It can be that leadership, that kind of catalyst position. Like, I mean, I've just never heard of a recruit being on a visit and driving 30 minutes, getting a group of guys together, driving 30 minutes to a high school and working out. Like, I've never heard of something like that happening. So, like, it's crazy, the story about him driving out to Jefferson high school and hanging out with Sammy Brown because he couldn't make the visit to Georgia. It's like, you don't really hear stuff like that. So if this guy is also an active recruiter, which every prospect isn't, you know, some guys just focus on what's best for them and that's all they really need to focus on. But some guys actually actively recruit. And when you're the top ranked player in the country, I think your voice is pretty loud in other recruits' ears.
Yeah, I like the main thing is it doesn't hurt, but it's like Georgia's a leader in this space, and Georgia, like, it's nice that Dylan Raiola is trying, but Georgia's going to recruit itself. The brand, the history, what Kirby's doing, the NIL, everything, the NFL track record, those are all bigger factors at this point in keeping Georgia as the Death Star in the sport, I think, by and large.
Want to admit the Raiola effect. Just keep you're resisting, but it's all
I'm
right.
not resisting
you'll
I'm just
around.
Saying like
come around.
I mean, you were gonna have a top the top number one class, regardless of if you got Dylan Raiola.
I think there was a chance Georgia could sign the number one class, regardless if they got Raiola or not. The state of Georgia is just ridiculously.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
year.
I just don't think it moves.
But
the
they're also
that
recruiting.
Much.
I mean, in Missouri, you know, I think they could sign multiple guys from Matter Day this year. It's like, you know, who knows?
Is Wingo a Missouri kid? I think he is, right?
Wingo. No, that doesn't sound right. Where is
Illinois? Maybe he's somewhere in the Midwest. Where is Ryan Wingo?
He's
St. Louis University. Yeah, he's in St. Louis, Missouri. Yeah, he's in St. Louis. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, Brock Bowers out of California, Darnell Washington from Las Vegas. You know, this big offensive lineman was from New York earlier this week. So Georgia's recruiting all over the place. So there's a chance they'd sign the number one class without Raiola. But with Raiola, it could be the number one class like ever in the 24/7. According to that, like whatever that ranking means, that cumulative score they give, it could, based on their data, it could be the number one class ever.
Yeah, we shall see, Matt Green. What is stat number two for you?
The other stat is the number 100, because sir, it is Thursday, May 25th. You are listening to this, and we are 100 days till college football season, sir. The countdown has begun. And so, in honor of 100 days, because nobody ever wore number 100, not that I'm aware of, at least.
Yeah.
No quarterback has ever actually passed for 100 touchdowns either. I felt like that could be a go-to stat, you know, but we had Drew Locke, Matt Leinart, who is that? What does that say? Tim Hiller from Western Michigan, Chase Clement from Rice. All those guys had 99 career passing touchdowns. Chase Daniel had 101 career touchdowns. I know you're a big Chase Daniel guy.
Number one, Mizzou. Who could forget Kansas Mizzou?
Absolutely. So what I decided Border to go War. With instead was the last time a team scored 100 points in a game, sir. And do you think you could guess the last time a Division I team, apparently
Georgia Tech Chaminade?
Apparently Rockford did to Trinity Bible back in 2003, 105-0. Georgia Tech, I'm not seeing Georgia Tech on this list. You got another guess, sir?
Army.
That is also incorrect. I'm going to just tell you.
Give me one more guess, because I feel like it's a small school. I feel like it's something out of the ordinary from decades and decades ago.
It is decades and decades ago.
I'll say I'm going to say Michigan.
That is also incorrect. I've seen Michigan State on here a couple
Maybe
times
that's it, yeah.
back in 1928, 1931. I know you remember those games.
Mm-hmm.
Big time beat down over Kalamazoo that one year.
Mm-hmm.
But the last time it happened in Division I football was Houston over Tulsa, 1968.
Huh.
And they almost did it again. I don't know if you remember the Pony Excess 30 for 30 SMU after they suspended the whole football program and everything and came back and were just terrible. Mm-hmm. Andre Ware in Houston. What was it like? I think I had it pulled up here. 95-21 Houston beat SMU back in 1989. Just absolutely demolished them. So, yeah, that's what we got. 100 days till college football season, sir.
There you go. I like it. I like it. Matt Green, a couple Nigel the Nighthawk, friend of the program, dropped off a couple news items that we wanted to hit before we get into our Big Ten over-under discussion, and then also some SEC Week 1 lines that are now officially out. A couple were surprising here, but speaking of the SEC, sir, Georgia Florida is sticking around in Jacksonville for at least the 2024 in 2025 season renovations, the possibility in 2026. We'll see what happens with the Jaguar Stadium, because that's still up for debate. Like, it doesn't seem like a new stadium's happening for them anytime soon, but I don't know. I think it's interesting because it seemed like there was a lot of momentum, and it seemed like Kirby especially and Georgia wanted to get this to become a home and home once again. And maybe it's because he's been looking at these home schedules for the Dogs in Athens the last couple of years, and it's like, we got to give these throw these fans a bone at some point, because as someone who was in the stands for Tennessee, Florida this past year, it is nice to have your rivals come to your place every other year. It's nice to be for that to be a home atmosphere that you get to alternate year over year. And we'll get into a program that is elected not to do that very thing this particular year, but we'll save that for a second. Matt Green, as a Georgia fan and a world's largest outdoor cocktail party connoisseur, is this something that you're in favor of? Do you feel good about this? Where is your head at now with where this game is played?
First of all, can I get that on a business card? Because I would like to have world's largest outdoor cocktail party connoisseur, maybe on my grave, you know, mm-hmm. on my headstone. I like that. But I think you nailed it because, for one, first and foremost, I think I would say 90% of Georgia's fan base feels, if Kirby wants it, I want it too. You know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, if Kirby thinks it's a good idea, yeah, let's do it. He's had some good ideas. I like this guy. We'll follow him off a bridge, you know? So that's part of it. I'm not a big neutral site college football fan, but these Oklahoma, Texas, and Georgia, Florida, like they're huge traditions in that. So it's like that neutral site already has the college football atmosphere, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I do kind of just want to preserve the tradition of Jacksonville, even though I think it'd be cool to go home and home. But I think you nailed it personally on why it seems to have picked up steam in recent years, because Georgia's home schedule has been like so whack, honestly. Like this year you look at it, like, and I never really thought about it before, because you look at Georgia ever since they did the they switched around the Auburn series back 2012 and 2013. Georgia played at Auburn consecutive years, and I guess the SEC kind of did Auburn a solid, but ever since then Georgia plays Auburn, Tennessee, and Georgia Tech at the same venue every year. So, or both on the all at home or all on the road, you know what I mean? And so since Florida is a neutral site, you have your four biggest rivals essentially every other year. None of those games are at home. So like that's not great for, you know, just having a consistently good home schedule. Like this year, I think Ole Miss is probably the best home game, just kind of off the top of my head.
That's maybe like Kentucky, depending on how Kentucky looks
this
year.
Yeah, and it's like Georgia, there's just never going to be a buzz around the Kentucky game. Like, I was literally at a Georgia-Kentucky game 2 years ago that was college game day. They were in the top 10, and it was like, there's no, like, feeling that we could lose this game. Like, with Georgia-Tennessee, you're like, you know, we're better than Tennessee, right? Like, we are better than them, right? That offense is really good, but we should be better, right? Like, you weren't sure if you really were better than Tennessee going into that game. There was a buzz around it. Like, Kentucky just doesn't really do anything for the Georgia fan base. Like, no disrespect to Kentucky. It's just kind of, it's a feeling. Like, they kind of have to earn it, like, scare us a couple times before. Like, even the Missouri game. Like, going at Missouri, Georgia's played a few tough games at Missouri that you go in and that's not... not the you don't have the easiest feeling in there. So I think part of it, like, Arkansas turned out to be, like, that was a really weak home schedule that year. Arkansas turned out to be a pretty good home game, and Tennessee turned out to be a good home game in 2022. But you've seen a lot of weak home schedules. But I love that they kept it for 24-25 in Jacksonville, because that was going to throw so many variables in there. So we have the new SEC schedule starting in 2024, and then people get it, Georgia, Florida in the swamp or in Athens, and they're, oh yeah, I love this. So it would just, this whole season's been better. Like, oh, and that's why, because this is on campus. But I think what you're going to see is that with this new SEC schedule, like, let's be honest, there's a lot of SEC West hate that Georgia's gotten through the years that, you know, some of those years that they're 11-1 is because the SEC East is so weak and they'd be the third best team in the SEC West. I think there's some truth to that. You look at a year like 2019, LSU and Alabama were the two best teams in the SEC, but Georgia was playing in the SEC Championship. So there's been some truth to Georgia's schedule being a little weaker than some of those SEC West teams. So now with Texas and Oklahoma coming into the conference and just most likely a ninth conference game, and we assume they're going to get rid of these divisions. I think Georgia's schedule is just, all the SEC schedules I think are going to be immediately just more stacked, and you're going to have more good home games. And right now you're like searching for what Georgia's best home game is. And I think in 24, 25, they're going to have three or four that are just big time marquee SEC matchups, and you're not really going to miss Florida being a home game, and you're going to be able to preserve that neutral site tradition.
Well, that's what I was tweeting back and forth with Logan Booker, another friend of the show up there in Athens. And I just think a sneaky big winner of the nine conference game model and the new rotation that's going to be implemented next year, I think the Dogs are maybe the biggest winner here. And you talked about like the SEC West bias, but like just having that rotation where you can, like, this schedule, I think, and it's not like a shot at Georgia. It's like they can't really control some of this. And then obviously losing a big game this year against Oklahoma off the calendar was a brutal blow too for this schedule as a whole. But it just, two things can be true. The Dogs don't have to prove themselves in the regular season. Like, that's not part of it. Like, no one's going to be, oh, the strength of schedule, I don't know about Georgia coming in. But I look at it as a fan where it's like, if this was Tennessee's schedule, I would, and I was in the position that Georgia's in, where it's like, these are the glory years. Like, this is the best the program has ever been. Like, this is the top of the top, and you're going to have two straight years, maybe three straight years, if you want to go back to 2021, of really subpar home games. Like, there's a reason Notre Dame, Georgia was so big for so many fans, and that home and home environment. And it's just, you want, when things are going this well, to have a reason to go to these games in stadium and see a lot of like the best you'll ever see as a fan in your lifetime, and like have as many moments as possible, against as many big, cool teams at home as possible. Because like, even when the playoff expands, Georgia's gonna be in that top group. They're probably looking at a bye. So it might be hard to see a situation where Georgia's hosting a first round playoff series in the next couple of years, because you know that place would be rocking and be a lot of fun for Dog fans that they would like to do. But Georgia might be too good, so they might miss those. So I just think I think from a fan's perspective, I don't think it's a stretch or a shot to be like, if I was a fan who was spending a lot of money on season tickets and wanting to go to these games, that like, this schedule sucks. And I don't think that, I think moving on to this new schedule coming out in 2024, there's going to be a lot more enticing, appetizing games in this calendar. And I think it's going to be probably the best Georgia schedule for fans in a long time.
I definitely think so. And I think it's going to make them miss that home game less. But I mean, I'll say, in terms of winners and losers, I think just everyone in the SEC East, to be honest, is more of a loser than everyone in the SEC West. Like, Arkansas is probably the biggest winner of this whole thing. Of maybe we don't have to play Alabama every single year. Like, that would be nice. Like, they just, I think this is second year in a row that they've had the number one ranked strength of schedule in the country. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Like you said, like, this is the time we want to play whoever, because I think we can beat whoever at this point. You know, we don't even need an easy schedule.
Right. And I think that's important, because the season goes fast, man, and there aren't many opportunities. You only get six home games a year, sometimes less than that. So you want to make as many count as possible, especially when your team is on top of the college football landscape.
And even last year, Oregon was one of the biggest regular season games, and that also wasn't a home game.
Yeah, and that place would have been rocking.
And Clemson the year before. So
that's true. Man, I didn't even think about that. Clemson and Oregon, back-to-back, two top 10 teams
at
the time.
And I want to say, is that happening in 2024, maybe? I'd have to Georgia-Clemson and Mercedes-Benz is going to be on the schedule coming up soon. So, and then Clemson home and home, like, a couple years after that.
But then you don't feel as bad about 2024. If the schedule is nine conference games and fun, and then if that one's a neutral site, who cares? And it's in the Benz, so it's not far, but different kind of field. They've played in the Benz so many times now. Speaking of indoor NFL stadiums, Michigan State, Penn State has moving to primetime Peacock on Friday night, the week of Thanksgiving, Matt Green. So Michigan State fans will not be seeing their Spartans play in East Lansing in their final regular season game, because Michigan State, Penn State has become kind of a bigger rivalry the last couple of years, with Michigan and Ohio State already having that lockdown. They're just like the sneaky, like, who's next, you know, like, those two teams have traditionally been fighting for that, just fighting from trying to get away from that tier two to tier one in the Big Ten for the last decade or so. And they're always recruiting well. They're always right there. Pretty solid. You can count on year over year, but never breaking through every year. They're not the Michigan Ohio State. They're not going to be at the top with that kind of sustaining power, that sustainability. But man, I just, you move it indoors and it looks like it might just be because weather getting ahead of that during that time. But man, what are we doing? Like, why is this happening? Why are you flexing this game outside of the home confines of Michigan State? And especially, like, if you're Big Ten country, you should embrace these elements. That's what makes it different. It makes it better. Is that, like, this is going to be cold. It might snow. It might be a lot of fun. Like, it just sucks. Like, you see that and you're like, man, especially if you're a fan, you're like, you just lost a home game. And that would be your final one of the year. And it's not even just like you're losing a no-namer, who cares? Like, I don't think Georgia fans would be losing a whole lot of sleep about losing Tech at if you moved it to the bins. I don't think that's really something that's going to move the needle all that much. You're like, yeah, I'd rather play it at Georgia, but like, it's whatever. Michigan State, Penn State might be a humongous game this fall, and it might be really nice to have your home atmosphere.
I wouldn't rule out Georgia Tech being in the bins for one of Georgia Tech's games. They're like, you know what? Well, we might as well make as much money as we can. We're not going to win this game, so let's just get as many people in the doors as possible.
It's just going to be all red and black, even if they try and do a home game at Tech. I think it's going to be...
I'm saying if they put their home game, because that's what they're doing, right, with Notre Dame or something. They're playing... Oh. It's one of their home games in the bins. Like,
that's dumb.
I think they... So they get some portion of the revenue, you know?
There's going to be more Notre Dame fans in that building than Georgia.
They're just
fans.
Like, ah, screw it. Are they doing that with maybe Clemson, too, or something? I could be wrong. But, yeah, they're just like, screw it. Just get as many people in here as possible. We'll take the money.
Lame. What are your thoughts on this move?
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I don't get it. Like, in terms of what you were saying about like where these programs have been, like, I've never really thought about that because Penn State is just a stronger brand. But like, Michigan State has made the playoff. Like, they've won the conference. They honestly, even in like the early 2000s, like, they've just been a consistently good program. And Penn State kind of went through their down years near the end of Paterno, and then obviously after all the scandal and all that stuff. So they kind of have been at that level, but it feels like Penn State's in a way better position right now. My biggest thing, it feels hypocritical after, you know, talking about Georgia, Florida should be in a neutral site, but it's like, that's the tradition, is it's at the neutral site, right? Mm. Is the Lions always have a home playoff game on Thanksgiving, right? So this is going to be Black Friday the very next day. Like, I know, yeah, it's indoor artificial turf or whatever, but that seems like a logistical nightmare on top of all of it. Like, I don't know, you're gonna have Lions stuff on the field, it's just gonna look like you're a high school team. I don't know, are they gonna get that field turned over overnight and it have Penn State, Michigan State logos on it and all that? I don't know.
It's one thing even not at it, like a Clemson, Georgia, where they're not in the same conference. Like, it's one thing to do those, like Florida State, LSU this fall. It's another thing to now move conference games into neutral site venues. Like, at that point, it's just so stupid. It's like, I don't get upset. I don't think any NFL fans should get upset. It's like, the more and more games in Europe, and like, it seems like the reason you go to 17 games is like, if folks lose a home game, it's because they're getting one European game a year. Like in Germany, the Falcons will be in Germany, multiple London games for the Jags. There's not really a home strong atmosphere in most NFL stadiums. It's not like there's this, man, it doesn't really matter where those games are played by and large.
They
most
just
Sundays.
Feel like dull, like corporate entities. Yeah. I don't know what it is about NFL stadiums.
That's why I don't
like,
get loose sleep over it. It just
some
doesn't
matter. These are state of the art facilities and all that, but it's like, there's very few Lambeau Fields and like Arrowhead Stadium. You know, it's like, college stadiums just have like a personality about them. The crowds are just louder. They're more, I don't know, the home field advantage just seems to play a bigger role. But yeah, you know, it feels hypocritical for sure, because I see A&M in Arkansas playing in Jerry World, and I feel like I don't hate that.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I see Michigan State, Penn State, and it's like, I don't know, aren't you guys supposed to be tough, like in the Big Ten, and like flex on these cold weather games? You guys are going indoors for the season finale. I don't know. It just doesn't seem right. Like, I don't know. And then Penn State's obviously, like, they're not giving up a home game. So Michigan State's just going to give up a home game this year to host in Detroit, and then back to Happy Valley. Like, Does Michigan State not feel like they have a good home, good enough home field advantage? They get some sort of advantage on being in Detroit? Like, is this a Little Rock, like, for Arkansas, like a home away from home, like, we don't know about?
That I do not know, but I mean, we'll see. This is just becoming the norm. It's like, I feel like I'm just old man yells at clouds, because I just feel like this is going to be more and more just a thing that happens that I don't like.
Yeah, but I agree with you. Like, Clemson, Georgia, and like LSU, Florida State, like, for some reason, those feel a little more acceptable since they're not conference games.
Yeah.
But yeah, I saw Michigan State and Penn State. I didn't like it. I didn't like it one bit.
SEC week one over-unders are out, Matt Green. It's never too early to start predicting games in this program. You know this.
Only 100 days out.
I mean, we're not that far. It's summer practice will be here before you know it, sir. Vanderbilt, Hawaii open in week zero. Vanderbilt's an 18.5 point favorite. And then we get into week one, sir. Florida, 9.5 point dogs at Utah. The biggest one that surprised me here, South Carolina, 1.5 point dogs against North Carolina in a neutral site game against the Heels in Charlotte.
Is that the Duke's Mayo Classic? Yeah.
A&M, 37.5 against New Mexico. Alabama, 37 against Middle Tennessee.
I got to jump on that New Mexico. I mean, I like Bobby Petrino, but A&M, did they score 37 points in a game last year?
That's a good point. That might be a tasty one to jump on right now.
Just saying.
37.5 is a lot to bet on the Aggies to cover there. Bama, minus 37 against Middle Tennessee. I'd probably take that one with 37 for Bama. Tennessee, kind of wild to see it. Kind of jarring. 27-point favorites against an ACC school in Virginia in Nashville. That felt a little high, but
that's an interesting one. So is this an indictment on Virginia more than anything? Like,
yeah,
are you thinking
so.
Virginia is going to be terrible?
I think it's just more Virginia's offense was god awful last year. And if their offense is even slightly subpar, you're going to get boat raced by the Vols in a hurry. Like it could get ugly. I could see it.
Yeah. I could definitely see, them being up 27 at halftime.
Yeah. Kentucky minus 26 against Ball State. Auburn 39.5 point favorites over Don Brown's UMass Minutemen. And
I'm also jumping on Ball State, by the way.
Ooh.
Kentucky, they mess around in these games.
Yeah, Northern Illinois last year, I feel like they played with their food.
They win these games 23-10. Like, yeah, I'm not liking Kentucky to beat anybody that too particularly big.
There
also, what are they? Losing Will Levis? They got Devin Leary? You know, who knows?
But their guy, the savior, the OC, Liam Cohen, is back from his one-year stint with the Rams. They were pretty darn good 2 years ago with him. Final one, LSU 2-point favorites over Florida State, which I thought was interesting, in the neutral site game. But it's not New Orleans this year. Isn't it in like Orlando or something? I think they moved it to Florida.
It's definitely in Florida. Is it on Orlando?
Is it at the Buck Stadium? Maybe? I don't know.
I thought it was
in Orlando for some reason.
You're right.
Camping World, whatever. But either way, Matt Green, which of those lines stood out the most to you? Which do you think is the most interesting?
You are correct. That is at Camping World Stadium. I was a little surprised to see LSU. I guess I'm not surprised to see LSU favored, because I think LSU is going to be better than Florida State this year, but I don't know, are we anticipating some sort of home field advantage for Florida State in Orlando, or is this a 50-50 split? Like, LSU is obviously a big-time fan base that's going to travel. I guess I was surprised to see Florida as a 9.5-point dog at Utah. I know it's on the road. Thursday night, you know, weekday road game, not a good recipe for sure, especially traveling across the country for like the first time for a regular season game in like 40 years or something like that, I think, for Florida. But it also has a vibe to me like the little Georgia Notre Dame from a couple years back going on the road. Like, year two of Billy Napier, like, maybe they're a completely new team coming out second year. Like, it's a chance to rally the troops to start the season. Like, because there is something, I think, too, starting off with such a huge game. Like, it can just motivate you the entire off season. It's just, like, it adds to the sense of urgency. And I don't know. I know – I know Billy Napier in Florida. It's not looking great right now, but I think I'm buying the year two stuff more than anything. I'm just a big year two head coach. You just see a lot of boosts. We saw what Heupel did year two at Tennessee last year.
That's fair. I think LSU, like my preseason national title game pick is Ohio State LSU. So I'm leaning LSU winning that, but I could you could sell me on the Buckeyes too. But I'm leaning LSU Ohio State to as my preseason pick, and LSU win the national title. So I would not be surprised if they win it here. But also, I think if you told me that Florida State was one of the four best teams in college football this year, I wouldn't bat an eye. Like, Jared Verse is going to be in this game. We'll see how he handles things. I mean, he looks like he's going to be a top five, top seven pick next year's draft. He was a big return. Florida State obviously cleaned up in the portal. Jordan Travis, I mean, what more can you say than he should be a Heisman finalist going into next year? He's poised for a gigantic year at Florida State. I think they're rightfully, the expectations are high. Benson in the backfield, they're loaded on both sides of the ball. And they beat this LSU team last year ahead of schedule a little bit. And there was a big talent differential on both sides. Harold Perkins, can he dominate this game and kind of take over and limit Jordan Travis? I think it's going to be fascinating. I do think this will be a close game and like that 2-point spread, more of a toss-up. But I think it's interesting to see LSU favored out of the gate here. But that's going to be a phenomenal, phenomenal opening week game. And I don't think it's going to be the same kind of game we saw last year, where it was just more of like a who wants to embarrass themselves more as we get things started, if you recall how that game ended and just how bizarre that game was as a whole.
Which game?
The LSU Florida State game last year.
Oh, yeah. And how nobody wanted to win that game.
No. I don't think that will be the case this year, because I think both are in good shape and well positioned to qualify for the playoff.
I think Florida State's one of the more interesting teams in all of college football going into 2023, because, like, do we know they're good? Like, they're going to be, like, preseason top 5, 6, 7. Like, they're going to be up there. But, like, are we basing that off of the six-game winning streak they closed the season on? When they beat Georgia Tech, bad. Miami, bad. Syracuse, bad. Louisiana, bad. Florida, bad. Oklahoma, bad. Like, they beat six bad teams to end the season, but they're just one of those brands. I think getting over
the Florida hump was huge.
I think that's true, and I think Jordan Travis looks good, and I think Jordan Travis gives you confidence in the quarterback, especially when so many of the big-time teams from a year ago are replacing their quarterback. It feels like he's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in college football, but I think there's a chance that they're just not that much better than they were a year ago, and we just see some of the same old Florida State, that not same old Florida State, but the recent history we've seen from Florida State.
That's fair. That's why, like, they play these games, and I want to see what it looks like on the field. Florida 9.5. I would hit the over on that one. I think Utah is going to beat them by more than that.
You think so?
Utah also is going to be good again.
I'm guessing North Carolina, just with Drake May, like, they're going to be top 15 preseason, I bet you. They're going to be like the 12th, 13th.
I don't think so. I think they'll be borderline ranked.
What'd they finish last year? Like, they were flirting with the top 10 going into the ACC championship, right? Like, they were like two loss. May have lost their last regular season. They lost like multiple games. They may have lost like the last three games of the season or something like that. But they were flirting with the top 10.
Okay, it was a little bit better than I thought it was. They ended the year on a four-game losing streak.
Okay.
You know what's wild? They were 6-0 on the road and 3-3 at home. 9-5 overall.
Yeah. So what did they get up to? Were they ever top 10? Can you see that?
I can't see. But they lost at home to Georgia Tech, lost in overtime to NC State, lost to Clemson in the ACC title game, and lost to Oregon late on that terrible turf situation in San Diego. I remember they should have lost to App State in Boone.
Yeah.
So the highest they almost lost to Georgia State, 35-28.
Oh, yeah, man. They were having some great Sun Belt, some classic Sun Belt games last year.
Like, they just were not a very good team.
But they got up to 13 last year. Okay. And they have Drake May. Like, Drake May is just maybe the best player in all of college football. Like, that right there, I would almost guarantee they're going to be preseason top 15. I've been like number 13, 14. And South Carolina, I would bet is not ranked, right? South Carolina is not going to be ranked. I don't know what you would base that off of. Like, I don't think South Carolina, like, from what they lost a year ago, and they would just, I mean, they beat Tennessee and Clemson. Like, if you're going to base their entire season off Tennessee and Clemson, then yeah, they're top 25, but they played a lot more games than that. So, I don't know. I don't see South Carolina as a preseason ranked team. So, I'm kind of surprised to see that as just a 1.5 point line, because I think Vegas might see that differently than like the AP poll sees it.
Maybe.
Or DraftKings.
Matt Green, do you want to do our Big Ten over-unders here?
Yeah, man, let's do it.
We're not going to get into every single team here because some of these lines are not as interesting as other, but I'll run through these real quick at the top here for what DraftKings has here. By and large, for every single team. Illinois, 6.5. Indiana, 3.5. Oof, old friend Taven Jackson, who transferred, not looking good. Iowa, 7.5. Death taxes Iowa, make it a bowl game. Maryland, 7. Michigan, 10.5. Michigan State, all the way down there at 5.5. Minnesota, 6.5. Nebraska, 6. Hate that. Solid line. 3.5 for Northwestern. Ohio State, 10.5. Penn State, 9.5. Purdue, 5.5. Rutgers, 4.5. Wisconsin, 9. Can I lead here? I think they're the one of the teams I want to touch on. Wisconsin, 9 kind of surprised me. Like, I understand Wisconsin as a whole over the last, decade plus. They've been serious national title contenders. They've had this strong identity. They've just been a well-oiled machine, whether it's Brett Bielema, Paul Chryst, whoever. Like, they had an identity, and they ran the ball really well. They put guys in the NFL after guys in the NFL. They had their blips with Russell Wilson and company. But without elite quarterback play, they were able to make it all work. Obviously been in the Big Ten title game, been right there in a lot of big games over the years. Just a perennial top 10-ish program. Last year, things really go off the edge. The Graham Mertz experience never got off the ground over the last 2 years. That being said, 9 is high. Like, I'm a big Luke Fickell guy. It was a weird hire this offseason that he brought in. Speaking of North Carolina, North Carolina's offensive coordinator. And a very, very different style than what we've ever seen in Madison, Wisconsin. I think 9 is just asking a lot for Fickell in year one here, transforming this whole thing. And like, Braylon Allen's a really good running back, and I think he'll be fine with this transition. But because, I mean, North Carolina's been able to run the ball with what Phil Lambeau. And look, it's Wisconsin. They have a lot of talent. But I don't know, man. I saw this and I was like, 9 is just high for Wisconsin out of the gate. I think if you're a Wisconsin fan, you should be looking at 8-4 is probably our target. Like, if we get to 8-4, we're feeling pretty good out of the gate here with Fickell. But that offense, whole new staff, whole new era, tough conference, tough schedule. I don't know. I saw that 9 and I was just pretty baffled by it. Do you share that sentiment?
Yeah, other than the fact that I don't feel like Wisconsin's like a big rebuild. Like, Wisconsin, like, they weren't good last year, but they got off to a bad start. By the end of it, like, they pretty much were the best team in the Big Ten West. Like,
Phil Longo, by the way. I said Lambeau, I didn't feel right. Longo, yeah.
Gotcha, yeah. I mean, they didn't obviously make the Big Ten championship, but it felt like they were still competitive, like. And like you said, I'm a big Luke Fickell guy, so I think he's going to turn them around quick. So I was a little surprised to see 9. I hate the whole number, and we can't get that hook. But 9 just feels like Wisconsin. Like, 9-3 feels like exactly what they're going to do. So I can't necessarily hate on the line. I was a little surprised to see them that high in year one, but I do feel like that's just kind of – what Luke Fickell in Wisconsin will become, because he just fits what Wisconsin is, that they're one of the programs that have just through the last 20 years or so, they have like the highest floor there is, right? Like, this team is never bad. Mm-hmm. They're always pretty good, winning 9-10 games. And then their good years when they, you know, have some excellent quarterback play like a Russell Wilson, they can win the Big Ten. So it's been a while since they had a Big Ten champion, but I think Luke Fickell can get him back there. I think Ohio State at 10.5.
Oh, can I say one last thing? Tanner Mordecai is going to be under center here for Wisconsin, who had an electric year at SMU this past year. Like, he could be a Heisman candidate for them. Like, he could be really good, or he could completely flame out. I just think there's so much more volatility in this kind of drastic change year over year, because he didn't do the Dion 70 kids in the portal. We're getting our own dudes in here. We're overhauling this night and day. Like,
that's because nobody's ever done that.
You have a lot of personnel that played a very different style. And, I mean, Heupel did a little bit at Tennessee because Jeremy Pruitt and Jim Chaney's offense was nothing like what Heupel was running in year one. A lot of those dudes had to make some serious, serious changes to their game when they came aboard. I don't know. I think it's going to be fascinating. Like, they have to go to Washington State. They lost there at home this past year. At Purdue, Iowa at home is always tough. At Illinois, I don't think will be easy. Ohio State at home is probably a loss. You get Nebraska at home, we'll see what they look like. And at Minnesota at the end of the year, that will be a tough one too. I think 8-4 feels about right for them year one. But if they get to 9-3, 10-2, for them to hit that over, you're asking for 10 wins. And I don't see that right out of the gate here. And I don't think that's fair for this group.
I mean, and part of it's that you just know what Wisconsin's going to be. Like, they still have Braylon Allen. Like, Wisconsin always runs the ball well. Mm. So if you got a quarterback that can actually extend the defense, like, they could be really dangerous next year.
For sure. So you had Ohio State. This is surprising. That's like my just layup. Ohio State 10.5. Like, smash that over right out of the gate.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Okay. I feel like it's just an overreaction to losing, I guess, CJ Stroud. But, like, until Ohio State doesn't replace a quarterback, I'm just going to assume the next guy is just going to ball out. Because
yeah, Kyle
McCord's
probably going to be good. I'm not really worried about it.
That's what they do every single year. So I don't even know. You got to go back to at least before Urban Meyer was there, right? Like, Urban Meyer had Braxton Miller, like, year one, I want to say. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you had Terrell Pryor before that. I don't know if there was ever a drop-off at the quarterback position. Who was after? Maybe you got to go back to Todd Beckman. I don't know.
Justin Zwick.
Yeah, maybe was Zwick. Was he before Troy Smith? That's going way back there. So I don't know. Ohio State just gonna replace the quarterback position basically every year. You know they're gonna have ridiculous weapons on the outside.
I mean, they might have two top 10 picks at wide receiver.
Exactly. Like, and I think Trevion Henderson was hurt last year. Mm-hmm. And I think people have kind of forgot how good that guy was as a freshman. Like, Ohio State's just loaded with NFL players. They're probably going to have the most first-round picks in next year's draft. Like, I think that's an easy 10.5. Because Ohio State's bad seasons, they go 11-1. And they miss the conference championship. Like,
they go to Notre Dame, though, this year. So that should be interesting.
Penn State, I think, is going to be very good this year also.
But you know what's nice? You get Penn State at home and you get Michigan State at home. Like, you obviously have to go to Michigan and the Big House, and you've lost two straight there. But
they got to go
to
Wisconsin,
Michigan State
too,
and
right?
Penn State, and they do have to go to Wisconsin. So they have a stretch here where, like, this is a little bit interesting. So from October 14th to November 11th, they have at Purdue, where they've had a house of horrors in previous years, as you know. So that's no cakewalk. Penn State at home the following week, at Wisconsin the following week, then at Rutgers, and then you host Michigan State. I think you could stumble there, and then if you stumble in one of those games, then you have at the Big House, and you haven't won in 2 years, and then suddenly you're 10-2, and you hit the under.
Is Michigan State going to be any good?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. They're a huge – Peyton Thorne's not even there anymore. Keon Coleman's at Florida State, who we also should have mentioned, that just another dude at Florida State.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest transfer news for sure.
Yeah.
yeah, I'm not sure Michigan State, what they're really going to be. But, yeah, Ohio State's definitely got a tougher schedule than I would say most years with that Notre Dame and at Wisconsin. But then looking at it again, I think you know what's going to be the most fun storyline of the entire season is – So you got Iowa at 7.5. Mm. This 25 points per game thing at Iowa. Like, every garbage time touchdown they score this season, people are going to be like, that's Kirk Ferentz just getting his son paid, getting that 25 points per game. Mm-hmm. They're going to go out there and drop 50 on, who do they play? South
Western
Dakota State.
Western Michigan at home.
Yeah. They're going to drop. They're going to try to run up the score on some of those early non-conference games.
I mean, they've got an interesting schedule too. You got to go to Penn State. You get Michigan State at home. You got to go to Iowa State for the Cy-Hawk Trophy. At Wisconsin, always tough. You get Illinois, a lot of home games late, but then at Nebraska to end, which has turned into a fun rivalry too. Yeah, I don't know. This does feel like an 84
to be.
Time. Yeah.
Nebraska Iowa just needs to be a rivalry. Like,
yeah.
It just, it only makes sense.
Right? The corn rivalry. Like, it's corn time.
Something like that. Like it's kind of weird on like a national scale. You're like Georgia, Alabama, yeah, two southern states right next to each other. It's obviously a rivalry, but it's not like that traditional rivalry. It's like that's Iowa, Nebraska. It's just it only makes sense. Let's just hate each other. Let's make this a rivalry. They need to come up with a trophy, some sort of corn trophy, Minnesota and Wisconsin style. What do they have? Wait, Minnesota, Wisconsin. What do they have? Is that Paul Bunyan's axe? Is that
I'm
blanking on
Wisconsin,
that? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's the axe. They're in the axe.
And they got the little brown jug up there, Minnesota and Michigan. But yeah, so some sort of corn trophy. I need to make it happen.
I'll say one that I think.
We also don't include Illinois when we're talking about any of these. Like Illinois was like basically the best team in the Big Ten West for like most of the season last year.
Yeah, they lost a lot. I don't know. I would sell any stock there. 5.5 for Michigan State, man. Like that tells me you're paying a lot of money for Mel Tucker to be open at a 5.5-point line, and then the embarrassment of losing Keon Coleman and Peyton Thorne to the portal this late in the cycle, and you can't really replace them. Is he on the hot? Like if he goes under and they're 5-7 and they miss a bowl game again, like is there firing potential? Like you're Michigan State, like you.
They feel like they're more in that position, sorry to cut you off, than Jimbo Fisher up here talk about, like, oh, you can't fire him, you're just paying so much money. Mm. Like, I feel like Texas A&M's like, no, we'll find the money.
Mm-hmm.
We're not gonna deal with this for much longer. Mel Tucker, it feels like Michigan State's really in that position of like, no, we're paying this guy way too much money. He's got at least like 3 or 4 more years. Like, we can't afford to fire this man. Like, I don't know. Honestly, with the portal and NIL and all this stuff, like, I mean, this is probably a big criticism on Mel Tucker because year one he went so heavy in the portal, and maybe this is the downside of trying to build from the portal from day one, like, and not focusing on the recruiting, because I think that's kind of a conscious decision that it kind of appears like a Billy Napier has made that, like, I'm not just going to get portal guys. We need to build a foundation here to maybe not be in a position like someone like Mel Tucker is. Like, it was good financially. Have a big 11-win season. And did they go 11-2? I want to say that year.
Yeah,
year two.
Mm.
And so, you know, it got him paid, but the cupboard seems a little bare at Michigan State. It's one thing to go 5-7, 6-6 in year four, is it? Mm. It's another thing to be predicted to go 6-6 in year four. Like, that's the expectation nationally, is that Michigan State is going to be super average, if not bad. And that's pretty bad if you have a top five highest paid coach in the sport.
I'm looking at their schedule. Central Michigan and Richmond at home is just a nice thing for Michigan State. They get UW at home. That's going to be rocking. I love UW at Michigan State here early. That's probably a loss. Michael Penix and company are coming in there. I think they're probably going to beat them. Maryland at home is suddenly extremely important. At Iowa, at Rutgers, you should probably clean up there. If you go 5-1 to start, then you're cooking with gas because you're at Minnesota. It's going to be tough. Michigan at home, you know how that's probably going to go. Nebraska at home, we'll see. At Ohio State, it's rough. At Indiana, that doesn't matter. And you get Penn State at home. Well, I guess Penn State in a neutral site now to close. But that does seem like the over when I'm looking at the schedule. I feel like they should go bowling. And I think you look at 5-7 again, and with that portal departure and what this offseason has been, like, I don't know. I think he's going to have to make at least serious staff changes and some overhauls here because a lot of money is involved and the results just haven't been there. And we'll see what happens with Penn State, too. I think that's part of it. So if Penn State and Wisconsin really break out, if Nebraska hits the ground running with Matt Rhule, then suddenly it's like, uh-oh, Michigan State's really, really falling behind the rest of the pack here, with USC and UCLA coming into the fold next year, who are both programs who are better than you at this present moment. So I don't know. Michigan State's in a very precarious time as a football program.
Yeah, without a doubt. And so all these teams can't go over, right? So yeah. of those top four right there, you got Ohio State, Michigan at 10.5, Penn State 9.5, Wisconsin at 9. Who's the most likely to go under?
Most likely, I would say Wisconsin. And then most likely to go over, I would say Michigan.
I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards Michigan being the most likely to go under. Like, I know you got J.J. McCarthy
back,
second-year starter. But, like, I don't think Michigan was that much better than Ohio State last year than the scoreboard indicated. Like,
have you seen the schedule, though? They open their first four games are against East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, Rutgers at home. Like, you got to go to Minnesota, Nebraska, but you get Indiana at home, you get Purdue at home, at Maryland. Like, it's very easy to see 11-1 on this calendar. You don't have to squint hard at all to see 11 wins.
You obviously have Ohio State and Penn State, and so those are the biggest games.
Worst case scenario, and if you split them, you're looking at 11-1.
I just think more and more I'm leaning towards Penn State being, you know, kind of breaking through and potentially, if not winning the Big Ten, you know, being that second place team potentially this year. I just think a lot is lining up for them in 2023, and the fact that Michigan is at Penn State, I don't know. I think Michigan, and also Penn State at 9.5, I just feel amazing about that at 9.5. Like, yeah. 10-2 feels like kind of the floor for Penn State. So I'm definitely going over on Penn State, but Michigan at 10.5, they're not bad if they go 10-2. You know, it's a good team, but I don't know. They could prove me wrong and do it for a third straight year, but I don't know. Something about Michigan, I'm not sold on them coming into 2023.
Interesting. I think they're
JJ McCarthy. I think he has to get a lot better, and he could. It was a first year starter. But I don't know. He was I feel like J.J. McCarthy was what people pretended Stetson Bennett was. Like, he actually was that kind of limited game manager that could make some plays with it. Like, he was pretty athletic. Like, I feel like Stetson actually was like a legit dual threat that made plays with his legs and actually threw the ball down the field. Like, I don't know. J.J. McCarthy, I need to see more from him in 2023. And he definitely could. I know we saw the jump Stetson made from year one to year two as a starter. But I think before I'm putting Michigan at the top of the Big Ten, McCarthy's got to improve for me.
I just want to see if Ohio State has the balls to fire Ryan Day. If they're like 11-0 going into Michigan, and Michigan's also 11-0, and Michigan beats them again, like, what, like, the fan base is just, you lose three straight to Michigan, like, just really unheard of in this rivalry. And like, it doesn't matter that you almost beat Georgia last year and everything else. Like, I just,
they basically did beat Georgia. did you see that message board post? No, you're right. It's just, I think Penn State might actually play a big role there, that if Penn State actually is top five, top six, because that's the biggest thing. I think it's like an old expression, like, people don't remember like the things you do throughout your life, but they remember the way you made them feel, kind of thing. If you beat a big time top five opponent like Penn State, and you just kind of have that feeling that we beat a big time team, like, you have a big time win on your schedule, it's those years where you, as Ohio State, you have a one-game schedule, basically. You're like, we circle this one game this year, and we lose it. Well, the season feels like a failure then. So, you know, if Penn State actually is that big-time national-ranked opponent and at the top five or whatever, and you have that win, it's obviously going to be awful to lose to Michigan. They care more about that than anything else. But, like, let's not go crazy here. Like, especially with the playoff expanding to 12, it's like, Ohio State, you're almost guaranteed to be in it every year. Like, it would just be so wild to me if they actually fired him. I wonder if before they fire him, if it would be like a Ryan Day takes an NFL job, because, like, the pressure from the fan base is like too much or something like that. Because I mean, that's honestly why Steve Spurrier went to the NFL. It was like the 10-2 seasons weren't really good enough for Florida fans. Like, and it, there's a lot of those 10-2 years for Florida in the late 90s and early 2000s, like the last like 4 or 5 years of Spurrier.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Well, that was fun exercise, Matt Green. That gonna be interesting in the Big Ten, the top of the Big Ten. A lot of storylines going on here. A lot of teams that are pretty close here, by and large, and we'll see just how it all unfolds. We still got a couple months to go before things kick off here, but 100 days where the college football season will be here before you know it.
One last thing about Illinois. I call me dumb, but I had no idea that Chase Brown and Sidney Brown were twin brothers.
I didn't know that either.
Until the NFL draft. I had no idea. So they lost, obviously, both of those guys. Yeah. It's going to be tough to follow up on. It's kind of interesting because I remember hearing Kirby Smart say through the years that a lot of running backs that didn't play, like later on, like kind of wish they had played defensive back. Mm. So he sees like a lot of like the same traits in running backs and corners. I don't know if you remember Cavassier. Was that his name? Lavoisier Carroll a couple years ago. He went to South Carolina. I think he actually like retired from football. But he moved from running back to corner and kind of back and forth. And so now you see two identical twins that play running back and cornerback. Like, they basically have the same traits. And we obviously saw two Hall of Famers, Tiki Barber and Rondé Barber. Is Tiki Barber a Hall of Famer? Maybe not. No. Rondé Barber's a Hall of Famer, though. But
yes.
Yeah, identical twins playing running back and corner. So maybe there's something to that.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Matt Green, that is all I've got, my friend, but thank you as always. A night removed from our normal time slot here on the Chase Thomas Podcast Network, CTPN, man. All these different shows each and every day here on the pod, but appreciate you making it happen on one day late, but usually, folks, it's up every Wednesday morning, first thing, and check us out on YouTube and all that good stuff, youtube.com/Chase Thomas Podcast. Like and subscribe, all that good stuff as we probably hit 1,000 subs over the weekend, so building that thing up more and more each and every day. So we appreciate the support, and if you're watching on YouTube right now, we appreciate it and all that good stuff. Matt Green, thank you as always, my friend, and I will talk to you next week.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.